You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, making the world a better place, one show at a time. You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, making this world a better place one show at a time. At least we're trying. You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, making the world a better
place. The hardest working man in internet radio is my father, George Wilder Jr., and here he is.
Thank you very much, and welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Ladies and gentlemen, it is raining. It is storming. It is just, it's a mess here, okay? So if there's interruption or cracking in the show, you'll know that it's probably being caused by lightning and thunder and every damn thing else. It's just a bad day. However, we've had a great, great Memorial Day weekend, and I hope you've had a great Memorial Day weekend also. And it was just wonderful. I'm going to talk about it later into the show, but it is totally raining. I'm broadcasting live from Chicago, out of Chicago, near the lake, and it is a mess. But luckily, it happened today and not yesterday in the city of Chicago, because it was beautiful, beautiful. I mean, we were out. I mean, we had a family outing, so it was just great. It was wonderful, and I'm still reeling from the fact that we've had such a great time family-wise yesterday, and I hope you had a great time with your family or whoever you were with, because it was a great Memorial Day weekend. The weather was so great. It was just so wonderful. I'm still in awe of it all. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Follow me on Facebook, Blog Talk Radio. Thanks for being here, everybody. Thanks. We're going to try and have a good show for you today. Remember, it's all about making the world a better place if we can, if at all possible. If we can try, you know, it's rough. It is rough. Making the world a better place right here at the George Wilder Jr. Show, one show at a time. All right, let's go to the phones. Let's see.
Hello?
All righty. You're on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Might be a few interruptions here or there because we're having bad weather. Go right ahead.
Oh, this is Melissa Hood? Yes.
Yeah, Melissa Hood.
This
great.
Is Melissa
Wonderful.
Hood. I was calling
I'm glad
in.
You got my email.
I did.
Yeah,
I'm not
right
ahead.
Yeah, you're on the George.
Hello?
Go right ahead. Tell us about yourself.
I'm an author and I'm a public speaker. I'm actually a doctoral student currently at Concordia, and so I'm just trying to utilize my degree to help people with ADHD. And so I was just calling in and trying to find out if there are anybody out there struggling with ADHD and how we can help them.
That's wonderful. I'm glad you're on the show because I have a son with that.
Oh, that's outstanding. That's outstanding.
I have a son here. Go ahead.
Go ahead. I'm so sorry. Oh, no. Hope it didn't cut off.
No, you're here. Just talk.
Oh, okay. Well, Actually, I used to work in the film industry, and I was a theatrical costume designer at one time, but I also struggled with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder on the side. And so I lost 40 jobs in 15 years learning to overcome the condition.
Wow.
And yes, sir, it was really a struggle. And I came down to the point where I was sitting in a parking lot one afternoon after I'd lost almost my 40th job, and I prayed, and I just asked the Lord. I was like, you said there's a way to overcome all this mess. I mean, you said there had to be a way. And so I ended up starting out on this journey where I went through a series of different events and different things, but I started learning the power of prayer and applying the power of prayer to my mind and applying the mind of Christ, things like that, and just to test him to see if it'd work. And over time, where I'd been told prior by university professors, I attempted college in the middle of all this three times, failed out twice, and I finally gave up because I just thought I was too stupid. And I didn't find out until later on my third attempt, which is after my father had passed away. And the only reason I went back and tried a third time for college was because I had to have a way to take care of myself. And so I made up my mind that I was going to do just that. And I ended up getting my BA after 6 years and was told during the middle of my attempt at my college education by a professor that maybe I just wasn't college material, and it made me angry enough to even try harder. And I just thought, maybe I am, because I'm just not a person to really just settle and just say, no, you can't do something. And so,
Melissa,
and I didn't even have a choice. Yes, sir?
Can you explain to all of us what is ADHD? Some people may not know what it means.
It's attention hyperactivity disorder, and it causes the brain basically to misfire under stress, which is the number one trigger of the condition. And so that's the clinical definition of it. And basically, some of the more in-depth symptoms are impulsivity, or people struggle with tics and quirks. They have forgetfulness. They get overwhelmed. The brain gets overwhelmed if they look at a black and white sheet of paper with information on it, because I don't think what people understand is that what the brain is actually trying to do when it looks at information is it's trying to organize the information. And the less mature the individual, the less mature their cognitive abilities are going to be. So it's going to hinder their ability to organize information while they're trying to learn. On top of the fact brain is struggling with stress, which triggers this, I call it the stop-start process, which causes distraction. But yes, sir, that's kind of the crux of the condition.
Wow, and you say you lost 40 years and 40 jobs in 15 years.
Yes, sir.
Was it because of ADHD?
Yes, sir, it was. Actually, what would happen was I would get into a job and I couldn't learn. ADHD people learn differently. We learn, like, people that don't struggle with the condition can learn with just audio learning, with a teacher teaching from an audio teaching style. But what we need, if we struggle with ADD, ADHD, is we need repetition, visual, audio, and hands-on all at the same time. And if we don't have all four of those components, we'll learn in bits or not at all. And so
you're right about that, because like I said before at the beginning of the show, my son suffers with this. And he learns differently. If you talk to him, he hears information differently. He might interpret what you say differently than what you actually mean it to be.
That's exactly. You know why that is?
Go ahead.
The reason that he interprets information, or that people like us that struggle with that, interpret information differently. It's because we're very literal learners, literal thinkers, literal speakers, meaning we say exactly what we see. Have you ever heard of the book Amelia Bedelia?
No, I haven't.
That's a childhood book. And the book, in the book, it talks about this maid who was working for her employer, and the employer asked her to draw the drapes. So, but she was so literal that she sat down and she drew a picture of the drapes, when in actuality, her employer just meant for her to pull the curtains back on each window. And so that's exactly how we... That's exactly. So when you're discussing things as a parent or as an educator to somebody that struggles with the condition, we need to say exactly what we mean and mean what we say, because we can't read between the lines. We're not, our brains, especially the younger we are, our brains haven't matured that much yet.
You're right about one thing, is that you have to keep repeating yourself to people with that type of a disease, because I find myself, in order to get my son to learn something that he should be learning, I have to repeat it almost 100 times before he actually gets it.
That can be frustrating, yes.
Yeah.
It is. That can be probably the most frustrating thing, I think, for parents and educators. But I'll tell you what, these kids are brilliant.
And he's brilliant. He's smart. Yeah.
They have high IQs. And the thing is, too, I think that parents get frustrated, too, because they get bored very easily. And so the parents are trying to figure out, well, what do you want to do in life, or what are you interested in? And we're interested in so many things because of the curiosity and the way our brains work, that we're always thinking. Our brains are going 100 miles an hour, and we're always trying to figure out the fastest way to get from point A to point Z in the least amount of time, the least amount of effort, and the least amount of money. And so if you let us do things our way, we'll make you a load of money. I'm serious.
I need it.
Your brain works. But that's what actually happened to me in my last job, is I had an employer who allowed me to use my gift the way that it was meant to be utilized. And she's like, you know, Missy, I'm not going to micromanage you. I'm just going to let you do this job. You learn it how you want to learn it. If you have any problems, let me know, and I'll train you. Go ahead. I'm so sorry.
No, it's okay. I just wanted to interject. I wanted to say that's one of the criterias that I think someone with this disease have to have. You got to have people who believe in you. You have to have people who know about your condition in order for it to be accepted. Because I think if people don't know about your conditions, and all of a sudden you just pop up at work one day and you start acting all this way and that way, you know, they don't understand that. So they might let you go. So you need people around you who know all about what you're going through with this type of a disease, ADHD. Don't you think?
Yes. Well, it's pro and con, actually, because self-exposure, I mean, it can work for or against you depending upon the person. And I think because the scientific world only discovered the condition like 20 years ago, I mean, because it's been a phenomenon. And so what they basically did, what would happen to me in past jobs is I would get employers who didn't understand me or didn't understand my tics and quirks, nor did I at the time. So I would get fired, they would think I was weird, or that, you know, I did things differently. Well, yes, I do things differently. We do things differently, but it's encompassing the way that we learn it. And so it is, self-disclosure is risky, but I think that the condition is progressing to a point now to where more institutions, like, say, education, job places and things are being forced to accommodate it. And so that's just something.
Totally.
Risk.
Totally.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just interesting, you know. I've learned a whole lot about it, but in my last job, because of what my employer did, I ended up winning Employer of the Quarter 5 times in 3 years with 9 pay raises and 8. And I saved my employer over $10,000 in an 8-year time span. And so it's a gift.
Wow. I mean, what employer would not want to hire you if you're saving the money like that? Doesn't matter
Amen.
What you have.
Amen. I mean, I'm sorry, sir. Go ahead.
I was going to say that's one of the greatest assets there is saving the money. you know, because, you know, I can put on a resume and say, the first thing I'm going to do is save you money. I get all kinds of calls for jobs. You're going to save us money.
It's the truth. You know, and with that comes, though, I mean, because we have ticks and quirks, there's a downside to it. And so, like, my ticks and quirks are that if sometimes I don't mean to be, but because I'm always thinking and I'm highly analytical, sometimes I get caught up in being kind of antisocial. And it's because I'm a thinker. That's the only thing. And so it's not, not me social. I'm just a quiet person because I'm thinking.
Yeah, you know what? If I can interject about my son, he seems to be – his school, his teachers tell me that he's very, very social. But once he gets home, it seems he becomes antisocial. I've seen him reject friends. I've seen him want to be by himself. I've seen him, you know, relishing in his isolation. And as a parent, you know, I'm concerned about that.
How old is he? Do you mind me asking?
17. He just had a birthday, I think, last week. Yeah, last week he had a birthday. 17.
Well, that's actually interesting in and of itself, too, because I was the exact same way when I was in high school. I was very social, but it's a surfacey social. It's a very surfacey social. And I'm not saying he's like this. This is me I'm describing, because I obviously don't know.
Yeah, I understand.
But when I got home, because my dad was military and he was very perfectionistic and things like that, and I didn't ever feel like I could meet up to his expectations, I got very quiet and I was just paying attention because I'm not a detailed person. That's something else we struggle with. We're not detailed people. Details throw our brain into overload when we're younger until we learn to become more organized. And so I was just trying my best to perform, which I didn't do very, very well. And because when obviously I was immature, and so I struggled in a lot of different areas at that age, but especially my studies. And so what I was really struggling with was really relating because I was afraid people wouldn't accept me. And it's because we know our own heart. We know our own person, knowing that we have ticks and quirks. And so it takes a very, very unique person to come up alongside of us, and it's usually a very non-judgmental person who's like, you know what, I love you for who you are. I love you just like you are, which as a Christian, for me, that's the way I feel like everybody should be. But we all have our own reasons why we do or don't do that. And but we do thrive in those environments best.
Yeah, I worry about him sometimes, and sometimes he comes out of, as you say, ticks and quirks. Because he does have them, and I love him to death. I try to treat him like any other child, regardless of his problems. And I do love him, but I do get concerned because sometimes it seems as though he's not ambitious. But I know he is. But he's ambitious in his own way, I think.
You know what he's doing? What he's actually he did the same. I did the exact same thing. Everybody thought the same thing about me, but what I was actually trying, that goes back to having so many interests, because when we have so many interests, we're so interested, we're interested in everything, but we can't do everything at once. And what you need to convey, and not telling you what to do, but what I finally learned as an adult, is that my parents allowed me to do almost everything I was interested in, but my brain was on overload because of it, because my parents were trying to help me figure it out. Instead of really pinpointing me in the direction where my giftings were at. And so I believe that God gives us strategic giftings. And if you can pinpoint those giftings out to him, almost 100% of the time as he gravitates into adulthood, he's going to utilize those specific giftings in his reality, that current reality as he matures. And so it's helping him to grow into those giftings. If you can keep him interested, because there are a lot of other components, obviously, that are going to play into it, such as life and choices and things like that. But it's so that he doesn't get distracted while he's on his pathway.
Oh, okay. Thanks a lot. I'm pretty sure you're not helping me, but you're helping a lot of the other people who are listening to the show or will be listening to the show. So thanks a lot. HD, I have a problem saying it. ADHD. Will that follow, let's say someone like my son, will that follow him on into adulthood?
Yes, sir, and most likely it will. However, he'll mature into the process. And my hope, honestly, is that because your son sounds like a highly intelligent young man. And
he is.
And so most likely he would be too bored. He wouldn't be satisfied just settling, say, for a trade job or something like that because of the level of his IQ. And so it would really behoove him to really pursue an education and trying to learn as much as he can learn. And that actually, if he is always like a lifelong learner, it'll pacify that multiple interest that he has, like having interest in so many things at one time. And so like for me, when I was younger, I was really gifted in the arts, and I mean, like, exceptionally. And so I gravitated into film and working in costume, which was, I thought, my biggest gifting. Well, my second biggest gifting, which ended up being my number one, is public speaking, which I had no idea.
Yeah.
It was my biggest fear. And so it's probably actually a hidden gift. He doesn't even know he has.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
All right. You say you're an author, so you do have a book.
Yes, sir, I do. I just actually, my first book was released August the 6th, 2015. It's Memoirs of an ADHD Mind.
Okay.
People can purchase it at Morgan James Publishing out of New York, or they can go to Barnes & Noble, any Amazon. They go to Amazon.com or any indie bookseller. And so that's already out there. But my second book is coming out in January, which is actually going to be called The King's Key Ring, and talking about the keys to overcoming ADHD and how to overcome obstacles. Because I believe that we're all born into the earth with an obstacle. Mine just happened to be ADHD, but I'm here to help people enter into destiny and overcome so they can have their dreams.
Yeah, I was going to say that your first and second book will probably lean on some of your own personal experiences.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I think that's our life message for each one of us when mm-hmm. we write, that we utilize our life experiences and things we've walked through to hopefully help others. So, yes, sir.
Yeah. All right. Melissa Hood, thanks for being on the show. Would you like a link of this show? Maybe you can put it on your website or your blog, and you can have your...
Huh? Absolutely. Yes, sir. Very, very much. And thank you so much for having me on.
No problem. You've been great. Bye-bye. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was Melissa Hood on the George Wilder Jr. Show talking about ADHD, which my son seems to suffer from. But don't get me wrong, people. He only suffers from it slightly. Denver is a very, very smart and intelligent child. He is an actor. He's a singer. He's a dancer. He's a music producer. You know, so he is very, 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 very active, very, very smart. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Melissa Hood, she was a great guest, wonderful guest. Hopefully, maybe she'll come back and talk about this again and, you know, at a later time in the show. But anyway, the George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. I will be right back, folks. Stay with me. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. All right, we're back, and welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show, and thanks to Melissa Hood for being on the George Wilder Jr. Show, and thanks to all the guests who have been on the show and all the future guests who will be on the show in the near future. All right, 6 dead in 69 shootings in Chicago. Memorial Day has been beside the fun and games that I've had, that my family and you have had during this Memorial Day weekend, this past Memorial Day weekend. The violence in Chicago has been over the top, over the damn top. Okay, 6 dead and 69 other shootings during this 3-day weekend. I mean, the damn shooting started last Friday night. What can I say? And if you've been listening to the show, you know I rail and bitch about the high crime statistics in the city of Chicago for a long time. Okay, from last year, shootings are up 55%. Murders are up 65% in the city of Chicago and getting worse. And the thing about it, we got a police force. If you listen to me on this show, you know that I have talked about the police department and their failures. You can blame the parents. I give them some of the blame too, but it's so much you can blame them for. You got to put some of the blame on the police department also. No doubt about it. We got a new superintendent. The only thing he knows how to do is get his face on television and talk about the hike. The thing is, before Memorial Day weekend, before the weekend even started, you had police, the police superintendent Mary Manuel and other city officials all on television saying that they had a plan for reducing crime over the Memorial Day weekend. We have a plan to reduce it. Obviously, their plans failed because it's higher than it's ever been. These people are totally inept. They don't know what they're doing. They don't know how to solve this problem. They're putting more of this problem on the families. They're putting more of this problem on the gangbangers and the thugs. Of course, these guys are going to shoot. These guys are going to commit crimes because they don't give a damn. Okay? You got to, like I've been saying 100,000 times. I mean, I've been saying this a lot. You've got to saturate these crime communities, the north and west sides of the city, because the crime is permeating all the way on the east and north sides of the city because they can't get a handle of it on the south and west sides. So it's coming over this way. Crime is everywhere. The police department, they just can't get a damn handle on it. They can't. But they're not going to say that with a camera in front of them. They're on television. They're on national news. You know, they're not going to say, well, we can't get a handle on crime. We can't do anything about it. We don't know what we're doing. We can't do our jobs. They are not going to say that. They're not going to say we blew it. They're not going to say that the police officers are probably scared to death their own selves. But one of the things that the superintendent did say, he said, we know where the gangs are. Then go get them if you know where they are. And he said, we know who they are. Then go the hell and get them and lock them up before they kill more people. And I've always said for the beginning of this show, the beginning of the entire show, that the police officers gang-banging, thug-ass murdering ass people are. They know who they are. Why in the hell you let them stay out on the streets to kill and to maim people when you know who the hell they are? There's no doubt about it. There are some police officers who are afraid of doing their jobs. They are afraid because they are afraid that they may be the next victim. And I like to say, if you are a police officer and you are afraid of doing your job, get off the force. Let somebody take your job that knows how to do your job and is not afraid to do the job. But the point goes back. You have to saturate these communities, and they don't do that. They don't do that. The reason why a lot of these crimes occur, these shootings and these killings and these muggings, the reason why they occur so often around the city, because there is no police presence at that time. There's no police presence. This is why this goes on. All of these drive-by shootings, if there have been a police patrolling in a car or walking the beach, those things would not happen because the police would be a deterrent for those kinds of things. And if they did happen, the police would be right there on the ball to catch these perpetrators. How many times do we watch the news? Look at the news, watch the news. A killing occurred, and suddenly no one's in custody. The suspects are still out there. It's all about saturating these communities. It's all about getting the police out here in the neighborhood, not playing volleyball with the kids and the neighbors of the neighborhood, but patrolling and looking for criminals, thugs, murderers, gangbangers. And stay there. Do not leave. Make that community your post. Build a house. Sleep in a tent. Let that be your post. That community. Do not leave. Because if you leave, the gangbangers, they're going to watch you as you leave. And the moment you leave, they're going to start shooting. It's going to be the OK Corral. But seriously, everything is serious. With all these shootings every weekend. It doesn't have to be a Memorial weekend. It doesn't have to be a July 4th weekend or a holiday weekend. This is almost every goddamn weekend in Chicago. 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 people are shot. And the police are walking around, well, blaming the parents. Yeah, blame them, but you got to blame the, you got to put some of this on the police officers. You got to put some of this on political on politicians, aldermen, mayor, city councilmen, because they can't seem to get the police officers over in these communities and post them there. I said in a few shows back, give them a post there. Let them be posted there. Let them spend eight or 9 hours in that community alone at that particular spot. At that particular area. And then when their time is up, their 8 hours are up, let someone come replace them. Like a security guard almost. You can get some security guards over there. But some of the security guards are gangbangers themselves, so we better put some cops over there. They may be in on it. Who knows? But that's my solution for solving some of the crime in the city of Chicago or anywhere. You've got to saturate these communities with police officers. Police officers are supposed to be a deterrent. You cannot be a deterrent if you're not in the community where the crime is happening. You're not there to stop it. And then when it occurs, you're blaming everybody but the police officers that were not there to stop it from happening in the first place. I do blame some of the police officers for no presence in some of these neighborhoods, these gangbanging neighborhoods. And like I said, just said, they know who the gangbangers are. They know where the gangbangers are. They know where the shooters are. They know who the shooters are. Go in and arrest them, regardless of whether they're doing anything or not. If they are guilty, arrest them. A lot of these guys have just gotten out of prison, gone back to their old ways, picking up a gun, going out and shooting someone. I don't have to watch the local news in Chicago to find out what's happening. I go and watch the national news or the world news, and I learn this stuff from them. And that's a shame. Anytime a negative thing goes national, it is really, really bad. And the national officials are going to be, they're going to be looking at the politicians like Bruce Rauner, Mary Emanuel, the city council, the Democratic Illinois legislature. They're going to be looking at all of these politicians in Illinois and saying, why in the hell can't you get a handle on the crime in that city? Why aren't you able to protect the most vulnerable people in your city from being shot dead in the streets, falling squarely on the politicians? Because they refuse, in my estimation, they refused to do the job. Now, listen to this, folks. If the South and West sides of Chicago were areas of the rich people, do you think this would be happening? No, it would not. However, the areas on the South and West sides of the cities are filled with nothing but poor people, the working poor and the chronic poor. So they just let these people kill each other. But it's going viral. And the only people who are going to have their foot held to the fire are these rotten, low-down, do-nothing politicians about the violence in the city of Chicago. Well, we got police officers. Yeah, maybe, but you do not have enough. You just can't have one or two police cars patrolling the neighborhood every 3 hours. You just cannot have beat officers walking the streets every hour, every hour to every 2 hours. You have to be there every minute of the hour for hours. The gangbanger is going to see you. The drive buyer is going to see you. The killers are going to see you. And they will be deterred because you're there. Or they may even shoot at you. The thing about it, if they shoot at you, the police officer, you are bound to shoot back. See, the citizens of those areas, they don't have guns and they can't shoot back. They can't afford them if they could. There has got to be something done about the violence in the city of Chicago. I mean, I'm in my studio almost every day on the radio. I hope you guys are listening out there and or either podcasting. It doesn't matter. And I rail about this. I talk about this. This is a serious thing for the city of Chicago because this is falling squarely on the shoulders of the politicians. They are the damn leaders of this state and city. They have an obligation to protect the citizens of this city and this state, and they're not doing it. It is not happening. Go turn on the news. No matter where you are in the world or in America, turn on the news, and it's going to come up Chicago. This is why I'm so enthused about our baseball teams, the Chicago Cubs and the Chicago White Sox, because these teams are winning. At least the Chicago Cubs are. The Sox have fell off. But that's another story. I guess what I'm trying to say here is I'd rather for Chicago to be known as a sports town than for Chicago to be known as a first-class murdering city and town. You know, I don't want to hear about Chicago becoming a national joke because of the crime. If we are a national joke, it's because, like I just got through saying, it's the politicians. It's their job to protect the most vulnerable in our society, including Chicago. You can even take this national. You can take this to the federal door. You can say the Department of Justice should get out here and do something. Regardless, even if Rauner and Mary Emanuel do not want the National Guard or the U.S. Army on the south and west sides of the city, it doesn't mean that this can't be a federal thing. Override them. Because these guys aren't nothing when it comes to trying to solve the crime. I mean, Rauner, Governor Rauner of Illinois, this guy, he doesn't even mention the crime statistics in the city of Chicago. He doesn't. I've heard him speak a million times, and he has yet to say anything about the percentage, the high percentage of crime that's going on in the city of Chicago that's worldwide. Chicago, there's no doubt about it. Chicago is going to fall from the third largest city to the fourth largest city. We're going to be overtaken by Houston because people are going to leave. They're leaving now, but more people are going to be exiting the city of Chicago. There is no doubt about it. And the politicians, they're going to spin it. They're going to lie about it. They're going to say untruthful things about why people are leaving the city of Chicago and the state of Illinois, because they don't really want you to know that. They don't really want you to believe that. But they can't really argue with the United States Census and seeing people for themselves packing up and moving. We still have no budget. We're going on almost a year without a budget. Rauner wants to propose a temporary budget. I disagree with that. I don't think a temporary budget will get it. We need a permanent fix, because a temporary budget was still saying we do not have a budget. Temporary. What does temporary mean? 1 month? We need a full budget that's going to fund schools, fund these social programs that he cut. He's softening. Rauner is softening a bit because he is a big loser. He's a big loser. He just lost. The legislature overwritten him on some middle class issues. That's great. Now he's pissed and he's very angry. Now he's back in front of the camera saying, I'll give you a temporary budget. That's nothing. That's throwing crumbs at the middle class people, at the people of Illinois. That's crumbs. We need an entire budget. We need a budget. Like I've said a million times, folks, this guy is up in 2018. In 2018, we're going to vote for a new governor. This guy, he's a weak governor. He's lost about every contest he tried. I guess he thought people were going to roll over for him. Even some of his fellow Republicans have voted against him, pissed. He's angry. He's upset because he wants to bust unions, and they will not let him bust unions. He wants to upend middle-class people, but the legislature will not let them, and I applaud them for not letting this guy have his way. He wants Illinois to – Rauner wants Illinois for him and his rich friends. That is no doubt about that. Ken Griffin. You know, they want Illinois, and it ain't going to happen. It's just not going to happen. It's not going to happen. All right, let's go back to the crime. I mean, it is – the violence is just off the hook. And, you know, I'm just about speechless, folks. I mean, 69 shootings over the course of the Memorial Day weekend. 69. And that's not even including the 6 people or 7 people who have died. There is just something that has to be done. This is just awful. It's awful that our politicians are letting this thing happen, letting people die, getting get shot on the streets. I'm pretty sure in Rounders, man, black people shooting black people. So what? But if the south and west sides of the city were affluent, rich people, houses, condos, businesses, law offices, this would not be happening. They would have solved every crime on the south and west sides. It wouldn't have even gotten this far if the south and west sides of the city were affluent with rich people. This would not be happening. But it's happening because the people on the south and west sides of the city are dirt poor. They're on food stamps. They're getting housing assistance or welfare. They're getting something. But let me say this. You don't have to be poor to be on food stamps, you know. But these people are dirt poor. And they're living in cheap housing or whatever. But anyway, something has to be done because Chicago has gotten a really bad reputation. There are some people who have said that they're ashamed to say that they're from Chicago because of some of this. And that includes the budget, and that includes Rahm Emanuel with all these high-ass taxes. And I've heard some people say, some African-Americans say, that they are ashamed to be black because of all the black-on-black senseless crimes. She said that I've heard this on another talk show. She said that I'm not going to call her name. She said that she was ashamed to be black. But somehow I was not surprised to hear that. I would never be surprised to hear black people say that they're ashamed to be black because of all the black-on-black senseless crime that go on throughout America. So I would never, ever be ashamed of that. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me on LinkedIn. Check out my writings on Amazon.com. And we will be right back, folks. Stay with me.
Clinton gave her most direct interview this afternoon about the campaign to win the nomination and on her upcoming battle with Donald Trump. Clinton told CNN she's going to be the party's nominee and Bernie Sanders needs to just get over it. She also expects Bernie Sanders' help to help her defeat Donald Trump on her way to the White House.
But Senator Sanders has to do his part. That's why the lesson of 2008, which was a hard-fought primary, as you remember, is so pertinent here, because I did my part.
It should be pointed out that Senator Sanders has never said that he would not help Clinton. Clinton said she would not respond to any personal attacks from Donald Trump about her family. This seems to be a daily occurrence for Trump. Listen to this exchange between Sean Hannity and Donald Trump about Bill Clinton's issues.
About what Clinton's done, how big an issue should that be in the campaign? For example, I looked at the New York Times. Are they going to interview Juanita Broderick? Are they going to interview Paula Jones? Are they going to interview Kathleen Willey? In one case, it's about exposure. In another case, it's about groping and fondling and touching against a woman's will.
And rape.
And rape.
And big settlements, massive settlements.
$850,000 for Paula Jones.
And lots of other things. And impeachment for lying.
Smearing, yeah. Besmirchment
and
of women.
And losing your law license. You know, he lost his law license. Okay.
For more on this, let's turn to America's lawyer, Ring of Fire radio host Mike Papantonio. Mike, it's pretty clear the strategy that the Trump camp is going to have. Bill Clinton's going to be a target from here on out. Is it going to work?
Well, I don't know why they're ignoring this as if it's just going to go away. Of course it's going to work. It's become a major part of their narrative because they focused it, Ed. They're not guessing here. They know exactly how the public's going to react to this. You cannot separate Hillary Clinton from Bill Clinton, and they're very smart about the way they're doing it, and it is going to have an impact. This idea of, gee, I just hope it's going to go away, is not going to work.
What should she do? What should the campaign do to respond to it? They are running some ads, and we're going to talk about that a little bit later, as far as the derogatory comments that Trump has made about women, but how should Hillary handle it? She says she's not going to respond to it.
Well, that's a mistake. The only thing, look, unfavorables are the issue here. Hillary's unfavorables are not much different than Donald Trump's unfavorables. For her to sit there and say, well, we're going to take it, we're not going to respond, is a huge mistake. It sounds like Birkenstock Democrats advising her on that. She is in a fight for her life here, Ed, and to think that she can stand back and just let Trump take shots at her and not respond to the idea that Bill Clinton is part of what's happening here.
What would her response be? Let me offer this. Whatever has happened in our marriage in the past isn't going to affect how I be the president of the United States. I mean, how does she respond to it if she is supposed to?
Well, I think that's those type of simple common sense statements is what she needs to use. But she needs to get in front of a camera and say it, Ed. She just can't assume that this is going to go away.
What do you make of her saying she's going to be the nominee? Bernie Sanders needs to get over it. There's millions of people who have supported Bernie.
It's not just Bernie that she needs to be talking about. She needs to be talking to progressives who have abandoned her in droves during this campaign, and she's not helping that matter at all when she makes statements like that. Progressives do not love Hillary Clinton. I don't know why she can't get that in her head, and this idea that that's just going to fall in line is a mistake.
Well, I think just a commentary here. The next interview with Hillary Clinton, I wish it was with me, because she says she can bring people together. Who is she going to bring together on the Republican side? What are the Republicans going to move on? Are they going to give up privatization of Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security? Are they going to change the tax structure? Are they going to increase minimum wage? How is she going to bring people together? Aren't we in an ideological fight for the country?
Right, and she has to be out front on ideology that she typically hasn't been out front on. She has to say, look, she has to sound more like Bernie Sanders than Hillary Clinton. And the first thing she needs to do is stop attacking progressives and making believe that they simply are going to come into her fold because she's Hillary Clinton.
Mike Papantonio, great to have you with us tonight. Thanks so much.
All right, welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show. We were talking about Rauner. Okay, here he is. He wants to sign a temporary budget. How can you sign a temporary budget, man, after a whole year? You need an entire budget. That's crazy because you haven't signed a budget for 2015. Now you're going to be two budgets behind, including with 2016. That's crazy. Springfield, with hours to go before the budget deadline, Governor Bruce Rauner's administration has produced a stopgap measure to fund the state through the end of the year. Last week, the governor urged us legislatures not to do Band-Aids, but now he's doing one. Urged the passage of a balanced budget with reforms, but now Rauner's budget director, Tim Nutting, on Monday penned a memo in support of a fully funded short-term bridge. This is crazy. First, Rauner was saying, no, we're not going to have any temporary budget. We're not going to have a stopgap budget. We're not going to put a Band-Aid on the budget. Now he's changed his mind. Hey, let's put a Band-Aid on it. You know, this guy doesn't know what he's doing. If he has to change his mind this many times to go back, I think this is the third or fourth time Rauner went back on something that he was adamant on not doing. This tells you right here. This tells you right here that he's weakened. He's trying to soften his stance because he knows this is a Democratic state and he just can't come in here thinking that he's Scott Walker of Wisconsin. It ain't going to happen. It's bad for him. It is really bad for him. And I think he's just a one-term governor if he's not carried out of the office in handcuffs. The guy wants so much and so badly just to tear down this state, to tear down the middle class, to tear up unions. The reason why he's one of the reasons why unemployment is so high in Illinois. People are out of jobs. People are dying. Their social net has been yanked from under them by Rauner, who's making up lies and reasons to why such things are being done. Rauner has his own math. Sometimes that's, you know, isn't the kind of math that you and I use. He has his own math. It's still his way or the highway. He's all over television right now trying to say that he is not a weakened governor when the statistics all around him show that. His poll numbers are in the gutter. He's going to spin that some kind of way to say it. They're not. People don't like him. He's going to spin that in some way and say they do. You know, so he's just a typical politician. He's actually a businessman who's trying to run a state like a business, and he's failed dismal. He's got an F from the two major newspapers in this town. He's on the list of America's worst governors. Wow. It's just something, folks. It's just something. All righty. We're going to do this one. Bad news for Democrats.
The morcellator is increasing the occurrence of uterine cancer while the FDA sits silent. See the story at drugsafetynews.com.
With Hillary Clinton still the Democratic frontrunner and Donald Trump the presumptive nominee for the Republican Party, it's a lot easier to do hypothetical matchups in polling. About a week ago, Hillary Clinton was leading in the state of Florida by several points, well above the margin of error. Today, less than a week later, it is a statistical dead heat in the swing state of Florida in a race between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. In fact, Hillary leads by 1 point in the state of Florida, well within the margin of error. But more importantly, in another swing state, Pennsylvania, Hillary Clinton leads Donald Trump by 1 point, again within the margin of error. In Ohio, Hillary loses to Donald Trump by 4 points. Several analysts have said that if Hillary Clinton wins Florida, she wins the election. Which, the converse of that, if she doesn't win Florida, that means she would have to pick up every single swing state in the general election just to win the White House. And these new polls that are coming out are not lending themselves to think that that is quite possible. Or it's certainly not going to be as easy as Hillary Clinton and the Democratic Party thinks that it's going to be. And I know it's early May, and these polls are going to shift one way or the other probably every other week until we get to the general election, or at least a little bit closer to it. So maybe it's not wise to read too much into this right now. But I disagree with that. I think we have to look at these polls today and see where the Democratic Party is already struggling. Now, in the state of Florida, a lot of people have said, a lot of very smart analysts have said that Hillary Clinton's going to win because Trump is so off-putting to Hispanics. And yes, there's a rather large population of Hispanics in the state of Florida. But not everywhere in Florida. And I think that's the thing people miss. I'm a lifelong resident of the state of Florida. I am sitting in Florida right now. And I can tell you what we see. We see an abnormally large concentration of hate groups, according to the Southern Poverty Law Center, in the state of Florida. We see large colleges, Florida State University, the University of Florida in Gainesville, University of Miami, University of Central Florida, huge colleges with college-age kids who disproportionately, I shouldn't say disproportionately, who overwhelmingly support Bernie Sanders, not Hillary Clinton. I will be surprised if Hillary Clinton wins the state of Florida. And I say that because, one, I've lived here for 33 years, and I think I know a thing or two about my home state. Another thing they're not considering is the fact that even if she gets ahead in the polls, remember, this is a state that for the last two gubernatorial elections, we have put in a man who should be in prison for the largest Medicaid, Medicare fraud in the history of the United States. billions of dollars this man's company stole from the federal government. And he had to plead the Fifth Amendment more than 70 times in order to not implicate himself in those crimes. We did it twice. Elected this man. So don't think that it's impossible that Donald Trump could win the state of Florida. Criminal behavior clearly doesn't matter. Hell, we put Jeb Bush in twice. We have allowed voter suppression and voter purges to take place in this state enough times that they have flipped entire elections, both the 2000 and the 2004 election. Things are not great in the state of Florida. We're going to be the most affected state in terms of climate change, and yet we have climate-denying people running the state. We elected Marco Rubio twice. So whatever you think about Hillary can win the state of Florida, she could win. She absolutely could. But it's going to take a lot of work. And if she doesn't devote a lot of her time to flipping Florida or keeping Florida blue, she's not going to win. Because Trump supporters are all over this place. And to be honest, I have not seen very many Hillary supporters. Of course, that's anecdotal. I'm in a redder part of the state than most people. So yeah, that's expected. But trust me when I say that Florida's not going to be a cakewalk. And these other two swing states, Ohio and Pennsylvania, also almost going to Trump at this point, or with Ohio going to Trump, this general election is going to be a lot harder than the Democratic Party is admitting to themselves. And every time that happens, they lose. Look, I hate to keep bringing up the election of 2004, but the Democratic Party thought for sure that they were going to win that one because George W. Bush had a, 50% approval rating. Millions of people had taken to the streets to protest him, his policies, his wars. He allowed or presided over the country when 9/11 happened, got us into the wrong war at the wrong time with absolutely no end in sight. So we put up John Kerry, a person that people are like, he's decent, but he's not enthusiastic. He's not energizing me. Maybe I just won't vote and, they'll take care of it. They'll vote out Bush. Didn't happen. And that's where we're headed this year. Those who don't know history are doomed to repeat it. And though the Democratic Party likes to think that they're a hell of a lot smarter than the Republicans, they've got a lot of learning to do when it comes to understanding the American public and just having a basic understanding of American electoral history. If they don't wise up now, they're going to lose not just Florida or Ohio or Pennsylvania. They're going to lose the country, which means they're going to lose the Supreme Court again for another 30 years. They're going to lose the House. They're going to lose the Senate, all because they're not paying attention and they're not taking their opponents seriously.
Yeah, I do agree with that. I totally agree. But let me go back to Chicago. The superintendent, Eddie Johnson, the superintendent of Chicago Police, is saying there is a debate going on whether the city of Chicago needs more police officers. He's saying, do we really need more police officers? Well, he's a prick. He should be fired. What the hell did they hire this guy for? 69 people shot in Chicago, 66 murdered, and he's going to wonder, debate if we need more police officers on the streets. What did they pick this guy up from? A dumpster? He doesn't seem to know what he's talking about. No wonder we have so much crime. Well, in these high-paying jobs, who are there to protect us that don't have a clue on how to protect anything. It doesn't take a rocket science to tell you that we need more police officers on the street. If not police officers, the National Guard, the U.S. Army. You need something because the police are overwhelmed. If there is a man shortage because of funding cuts. And it looks like we are going to go. We're going to go without another state budget. Another year without a goddamn budget. I'll be right back, folks. All right, welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show. I think we're understanding that the state of Illinois may be getting a stopgap budget for the rest of the year. That would be great, but it will not happen tonight. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Okay. It says, Emmanuel apologizes to Rauner for a comment about his wife. Wow. Another wife doozy. I mean, why are these politicians, you know, slapping on each other's wife? That's crazy. While basking in his pension win, Mayor Rahm Emanuel apologized Tuesday for talking about a group run by Diana Rauner suing the state for payment. Wow. Wow. That's Rauner's wife is suing him, the state, for money for her charities. His own wife, the governor's wife, is suing him for money. That is something. That is totally something. Yeah, Rauner is trying to portray himself as a compromiser. He's trying to portray himself as the victim in all of this, and he's the culprit. I mean, he's trying to turn this back around on Democrats, trying to say Democrats is to blame for everything. Democrats is to blame for everything. And it's him. If it wasn't for Rauner being in office, we would not be in this mess. We would not be almost a year and so without a budget. A year going on two budgets. So all the Republicans are trying to spin this and blame it, put it back on the Democrats, and it is not working, folks. We've got 60 to 70,000 state workers in the state of Illinois. Their paychecks are about to stop. You think they're going to blame the Democrats for that? This would have never happened under Democrats. Democrats don't do anything like that. Democrats are for the middle class. Democrats are with the middle class. Democrats supposedly represent the middle class. Republicans do not. Republicans represent corporations, other rich people. you know, buying off votes, buying political office. This is what they're about. And then doing their dirt and blaming the other guy. See, that's one of the things we have to realize, folks, in the state of Illinois, that these people are the blame to what's happening, and do not let them spin it any other way, whereas to get you to believe that it's somebody else's fault. That's not going to happen. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. It's been a hell of a day, folks. I've enjoyed it. It's been fun. I'm glad to be back on the air after actually 4 days of being off. Those 4 days was actually the Memorial Day weekend. I've been talking about the deadly shootings, and I want to say something about the gorilla. If you've seen it, it's all over the news. Where a 4-year-old boy fell into an area where there was this large gorilla, and suddenly the zoo, they shot the gorilla and killed the gorilla, and now a lot of people are blaming the mother for being a bad parent. I totally agree. I think the mother should have held on to her son. You know, it's bad parenting. But like I've said in a few other shows, a lot of parents who are bad parents, they do not like to be called bad parents. I mean, they're going to find out every way there is to try to stem that title that you or I have put on them. I mean, anytime you take this drowning in this lagoon or this river of two children, 11 and 12, boy and girl, the girl is dead of drowning, and now the boy, it's bad parenting. I mean, why were two kids out alone near a river or a lake or lagoon by themselves? They should have been supervised. There should have been a parent there. Just like when this guy fell into this little 4-year-old kid fell into this area where this gorilla was, and the gorilla was dragging him around in the water by his arm. I don't think by the video that I've seen of this gorilla dragging a boy around to me, it seemed like the gorilla was playing with him, because if the gorilla wanted to really hurt him, he would have done it the minute that boy fell 15 feet down into that area where that gorilla was. The gorilla would have killed him, but the gorilla didn't kill him. I think the gorilla was playing with him. He was a kid. But then suddenly the zoo officials, the managers, they shot the gorilla. And now the world is in an uproar over saying that somebody should be charged for the death of that gorilla. And a lot of people are putting it on the parent, and the parent is coming out saying, I'm not a bad parent. It was just an accident. So what do you think? What are you, 347-857-1762? You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. And today, as I'm in my studio and I'm looking out on the boulevard, it is a total contrast from what it was yesterday, the Memorial Day weekend. I mean, it was sunny, it was bright, it was warm, it was beautiful. People were out everywhere, you know, families, friends. I mean, it was just totally beautiful. I think in Chicago and in my time, I think it was one of the greatest Memorial Days of all time. Even though I didn't think it was going to be that way a few weeks ago, because it was cold as hell. It was like winter. But then it subsided and we got some great weather, some warm weather, which I didn't think we were going to get. I was surprised. But anyway, it was one of the greatest Memorial Days I think I've ever had in my entire life, folks. I'm not going to lie to you. I mean, I am not going to lie to you. I'm not going to get into a lot of details about what we did and where we went, but it was fun. It was fun, and I hope you had a great day also. And if you're podcasting this show, you know that this show was taped on May 31st, 2016. So, when you listen to it, folks, it won't be that damn old. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio, and I'm just having a great time. Let's see what else we can talk about before the show is over. We've talked about the killings and stuff like that. We've talked about no budget in the city of Chicago, and they're talking about a stopgap budget until the end of the year that's going to temporarily fund everything. Later on, I said it wouldn't go. And I'm still thinking that it shouldn't go, that we should get more than a st- stopgap budget. We should have a full budget. But they may just say, hey, this is better than nothing. Let's go with it. We'll find out. All right. Trump, I wanted to get this in before we went off the air today. Trump blasts the media. Trump, this is about, folks, I'm pretty sure you've probably heard about it if you're following it. Trump made some donations to the veterans charities. And the media is saying, if you made all those donations, we can't find anywhere where you made donations at. You have to prove that to us. You say you gave the money? Where? Then all of a sudden, Trump pops up on television at one of his rallies, and he has a whole list of veteran charities that he's reading off of this list into the camera and saying, hey, wow, I've gave money to this organization, to that one. He was just sprouting them off, and no one seemed to dispute him. So, and he's pissed off that the media was trying to say that he was actually lying about donations to veteran charities, and he actually had to prove to them that he was not lying. And he's pissed off about that. He's talking about the political media. I never heard of that, political media. Media is media, whether it's political or conservative or liberal. Media is media. That, I think what he was trying to say was the conservative media, the Republican media, because that's the media that's trying to take him down. And I'm also hearing that there's going to be another person running for president. I don't know. Somebody's going to jump in the game at the last moment. That's crazy, because whoever jumps in, they will not have name recognition. They will have a hard time getting voters at this late in the game. So, you know, we'll just have to wait for that. Tune in for that later, because that doesn't sound quite right to me. All right. Actor Michael Jace shoots and kills his wife. He's an actor. He's an African-American actor. He's convicted. He's in jail. This is a 2014 shooting, Michael Jace. Yeah. He starred in a few, some movies and some television programs, most notably The Shield. I mean, I've got some of those. I've got some of The Shield. I've got that show. I think the last season of the show, I have it over here in my library. And this is something, an actor, a notable actor, shoots and kills his wife. This is, folks, this is another episode of domestic abuse. That's all this is. From my understanding, his wife was a runner. She loved to run. She likes to run around the neighborhood, you know, a jogger. And somehow he was pissed off at that. And he, from my understanding, was trying to shoot her in the legs to keep her from running or something like that. This is just another example of domestic abuse, and I'm doing a story on domestic abuse, so it should be out next year, and it's going to be hard-hitting, so stay tuned for that. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. You know, I keep getting these notes on my desk. Oh, it was a great Memorial Day. Yeah, great Memorial Day. Wonderful. All right. Okay. I got to also research some acting classes for my kid. I think he's a good actor. I mean, I think he loves the stage. He loves to show off. He loves to dance and act a fool in front of people. So I think I'm going to be taking him to a few auditions. Let him try to see if they think he's talented enough to act silly on stage. Oh, wow. It's fun. Okay. I'm working on a few stories, folks. I'm working about three. And then after that, I may give up writing altogether and just sink into something else. All right. You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. You miss a show here, you will miss a hell of a lot. 347-857. I want to thank my guest, Melissa Hood, for being on the show. She was great. We've got about how many more minutes? 20 minutes, 21 minutes, and 9 minutes into the show. Anyway, it has been a blast. And we got about 8 minutes. I'm thinking eight or nine minutes left into the show. Okay.
You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio.
The George Wilder Jr. Show. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Sister dead, brother killed, missing in the Kankakee River. That's what I was talking about earlier in the show. And I was saying that it was a bad parenting move, you know. And that's totally what it is. Kankakee River. Obviously, the brother's been missing since last night. Obviously, you can say he's dead. It's probably a recovery more than a rescue, I'm pretty sure, at this point in time. But it's totally, totally bad parenting. And like I said before, parents, most parents don't want to be called bad parents, even if the evidence is overwhelming. You know, they don't, I mean, they'll stick a knife in you if you call them a bad parent, you know, even though they are. But, you know, I talk about bad parenting, but I do know there's some great parenting out there, too. And I do know that there are some great people out there who care about people. And I know there's some great people out here who are doing everything they can to keep the youth, our young people, from going astray. There are so many good people out here who are mentoring and teaching and showing and gathering our young people together and talking to them, lecturing them about making something of themselves. And I applaud those kinds of people. I truly do. You know, getting them off the streets, giving them something to do, believing in them, loving them, you know, because the bullets, they have no name. The bullets have no name. Okay. So I applaud all those folks out there who are mentoring and nurturing our youth where the parents have failed. Okay. So there are a lot of people out there who are doing the right thing. 90 seconds, they say. I applaud a lot of people who are doing all they can to keep our youth alive, off the streets and alive, and keeping them from, you know, going in the wrong direction. It's a lot of them out there. And my hat is off to each and every one of them. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. It's been a great day, folks. It's been wonderful. And I'm going to go out with this. I hope you guys join me tomorrow. I will be back on tomorrow at 6 o'clock to 7:30, 8 o'clock, depends on the show. starting the month of June, we're going to have some great guests on the show, folks. Please don't miss that. Tune in for all of that. We've got great guests throughout the month. I've been booking my ass off, and it should be great. Anything goes, things in the news, smart quiz question, great guests, timeless talk, and more on the George Wilder Jr. Show. All right. I hope you are with me tomorrow. Bye-bye, everybody.